But for me, whenever I had a harder moment, training was always a way to, not really to escape, but to put my energy into it. And so many times when I had some difficulties in life, then I went back in the gym.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. The purpose of this show is to share stories of hardship and victory as an encouragement for those in the middle of their own hard thing. Because we know hardship produces perseverance, which produces character, which ultimately produces hope. Today's guest is Adrian Bonhetti. Adrian is a former competitive jump rope athlete and performer for Cirque du Soleil and the founder of Jump Plus World. Adrian shares her story of training to set the triple under world record, which stood for nearly 10 years at over 300 consecutive triple unders. If you enjoy the show, please don't forget to subscribe and leave a review so more people can be encouraged by the stories we share. Now here's the conversation with Adrian Bonhetti. Adrian, welcome to the Do Hard Things podcast. It's great to have you. I'd love to give people context for who you are if they've never heard of you before. So the question I like to ask is, when people ask you what you do, how do you answer them or what do you tell them?
I say straight away, I do jump rope for a living. And then I have to explain what that means exactly and what kind of jump rope am I talking about and what it includes and how can you actually make a living out of it. So then the conversation expands a little bit.
So how long have you been doing that for?
Well, I started jump rope more than 30 years ago. I did close to 15 years of competitions and afterwards I did performances. Well, I have been doing performances because I still work on that field. And also I started to give a lot of fitness trainings with jump ropes, also selling some jump ropes. Whatever can relate basically to rope skipping or jumping rope, I take it.
Yeah. Anything possible.
Yeah.
How many people do you think can say in the world their job is to jump rope?
I think it's more and more people. I remember when we started to do the performances and actually the performances are the part that you can make a good living after you are done competing. At that moment, well, it was maybe like 15 years ago. So at that moment, not too many people. For sure.
Yeah.
I would say in the world, maybe 10 people or 15, or I don't know about the rest. That
right.
would have been the answer. Now I think a lot more people, a lot of small brands start to come to life and they start to have more and more interested people joining a jump rope group or a community. So I think it's spreading.
Yeah. So 10 people when you did it. And I'm just wondering, when you set out, like if you finished competing and you set out to make a living doing jump rope, did you think this is going to work? Or were you a little bit unsure if it would last?
I didn't think I would be able to make a living out of it, but I always wanted to do jump rope. So I think the amount of time that I spent on training and also teaching in the beginning, I was feeling sad to leave it behind just like that, you know, and just keep doing something else, which is a completely different job. So I always stick with it, even when I had to work something else because I couldn't make a living out of jump rope.
Yeah.
But I also believe that the energy that you invest or put in things that you like to do eventually bring you to a place where you can really focus your life on it eventually, and you can find a way to make a living. And we've been in also... I mean, in a lucky situation, because after competing, we got a call from Cirque du Soleil for an audition. So we went right away. And then my sister started working for them very soon after the audition. But I had to wait 6 years before I got a contract. So I was working a lot in fitness, giving classes, giving kids classes with jump rope, doing performances basically for free. And I said that one day maybe I will get a contract for something, but for the moment it's what I like to do anyway, so but you know, not paying doesn't matter.
Right. So thinking about jump rope, who was like your arch rival, nemesis, person that you were competing against, you were trying to beat when you were growing up?
quite a few generations, actually. When I went mostly in Hungary, we had another Hungarian girl in the European community who was really good. And honestly, she beat me most of the time. Oh. And then we went to a world championship in Australia. And I'm able to train, actually. If I like training, but more than the competition itself. I enjoy the training process. The competition for me, it's a nice challenge, but it's not stressful in a way. You get, of course, excited, but I enjoy this kind of environment.
Yeah.
And so we went to Australia for a competition, and I thought that because of one of the disciplines, I was better than her, that it will be now great, you know. And then I remember it was a girl from the United States for triple unders who did like a crazy number. I never even thought it was going to be possible to do this much. It was, at that time, it was 200, if I remember right, it was 250.
Wow.
Consecutive triple unders. And if you try that, you know, it's a big number. Yeah. So especially for, I mean, I think she did more than the boys at that time also.
Wow.
In that particular competition. And then I came home and then I thought, okay, so this is possible actually to do this much. But how?
Yeah.
So I spent, I think, maybe like 8 months training. And then I went for the next competitions. And I know her name. It was Emily Bonnet, probably. I don't know. She's not doing competitions anymore. But she was really good. And then I came back home and then I practiced. And 8 months after, I could reach at one of the selective competitions 300. And then the number kept growing, 310, 320, and 330, and so on. Then you know that, okay, then you can reach it with certain amount of training. And this was the first time I was able to beat most of the people in Europe. And also with this number, it was a world record for 10 years, close to 10 years. And then Tori Box arrived. And then I knew that, okay, this record will last some time, but she will get it at one point for sure. Like, that's how it is. And she's, I think she's maybe 10 years younger than me or something like that, maybe more. Yeah. When you see her competing, then you know, and you see the type of discipline she has, that if not now, on one day she will get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
that's,
cool.
That's the goal eventually, that you set, I think, a challenge for the next generation to reach.
Yeah, and, yeah.
It's a good thing that the sport is developing still, and it will continue to develop.
Well, I was going to transition off of that idea of like challenging one another and being encouraged by seeing somebody else who's done something that's really difficult. Because that's kind of the point of this podcast and the idea of hearing people's stories so that in the middle of a hard thing, you can be encouraged. And so the primary question in this podcast is, what is the hardest thing in your life that you wouldn't take back?
Probably this would be this triple under preparation.
Really?
This was a hard period. I mean, it was a fun period also, but now thinking back, it was a lot of training. At that time, I didn't realize, because of course, it's a different period of the life. But now if I had to do it again, I don't think I would be able to do one more time the same kind of training. Anyway, of course, and it's changing for sure what counts a hard thing during the life and whether if it's training centered or outside of sports. But for me, whenever I had a harder moment, training was always a way to, not really to escape, but to put my energy into it. And so many times when I had some difficulties in life, then I went back in the gym. And I spent long hours in the gym to many of my routines, actually. The first one, which I did, had, I think, close to 9 million views now or something like this on YouTube. This was a result of a hard time in some other areas, some other fields of my life. And I spent, I remember, like 4 or 5 months in the gym to create this routine. And I went, it was a celebration for my younger brother's school leaving exam. And they asked me, do you think you can show a little bit with the skipping rope? And somebody recorded it, put it on YouTube. I did this routine, which I worked on for four or five months. And it went, the next day, my phone didn't stop ringing.
Really?
Yeah, it was like this. And then we did another one in Budapest, which was more a promotion for the city itself with the jump rope. This was also changing the concept of actually videos here at this, I mean, in Europe in general, or Central Europe, I would say, that you can present the city in a completely different way. It doesn't have to be that this regular touristic talking behind it, but you can put some action in front of it, guide the people around. And this also had like 4 or 5 million views, which I'm actually proud of, because the Hungarian Tourism Department used it for the promotion of the city. Also many times, then now jump rope is part of their touristical trips. And
Really?
Yeah, it's cool.
Mm-hmm. That is really cool. So let's go back to that first one, because it reminds me a little bit. So I had a hard season where, and I'm not equating this hard season to whatever yours was, but I had a hard season, I felt like, where my girlfriend, my first year in college, university, as you guys say, broke up with me. And I was so emotional. Like, I took out all my emotions into writing music. And but it sounds like you put all your emotions into choreographing a jump rope routine. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, when you think about that routine and the choreography, were you trying to tell a story, or were you just like, take me through the creation process of, because it came out of a hard season, like, was there more meaning in it versus just having it be an escape?
I think that there was a meaning in it. And after you forget a bit the meaning, like, in not entirely, of course, but I remember the process in the gym, and I'm very specific on having the choreography tuned with the music,
yeah,
and just in everything to it. So when learning the music, of course, you have some bits and pieces when you think, for this part is more maybe it's a little bit more sadness, maybe it's a bit like that, it's like this. So in a way, you try to put the emotions that you have through the whole routine somehow. You start with it depends also on the music, but usually it's always a slower start, and then it goes up to a peak in a way when you get really angry and you put all your speed in the rope. I'm joking. No, I wasn't angry at this point. I wanted to create something that is really tuned actually with the music, and it's a good match to the song, fits with the outfit, fits with the scene. So maybe, I don't know, because the routine itself, when I look at it, and many maybe competitive people look at it, it's not really difficult. It's okay, it's long, because it's 3 minutes and 40, and 3 minutes and 40 after you do competition, most of the freestyle routines are a minute and a half maximum. So it's a big difference to jump 2 more minutes on the same frequency or intensity in a way. But I think maybe not really necessarily a story, but when you perform, you put your emotion in the performance in a way. And that probably people feel, other than just watching a jump rope routine. So maybe more like this, rather than it's a really story-based routine. It's more that you feel that, okay, it's now all her energy is out. Now she's doing 3 minutes and a half.
Yeah, she's spent at this point. Let's go back to the hardest thing, which you said was training for triple unders. So part of the question is, why wouldn't you, like, you wouldn't take it back? I'm curious, like, the reason it's phrased that way is because there was some benefit to this hard thing. I think we try to escape difficulty a lot of time because it makes us uncomfortable. We're not sure what's going to come from it. So why would you not take back this really difficult season of training?
For me, it was also a challenge if I'm actually able to do it at all in general, and also an experimentation, because I studied sports and English, but sports mostly my field.
Like exercise science?
Exercise, yeah, and training methodology. And then for jump rope at this moment, it didn't really exist like a lot of, not necessarily scientific, but already tested training methods. While I was studying, I tried everything on myself, basically, how I can plan it for, let's say, 6 months of preparation, how I can reach the peak performance on the day when I need it, for sure. Of course, you also do the nutrition part and everything that belongs to it. So I wanted to do it in a professional way. And this at this time, it didn't exist, basically. It was more a sport that you do on the side, maybe as a cross training. And even if you did competitions, the amount of training was not enough to really be treated as a professional athlete. And that I wanted to change.
Yeah.
Because I like this part that you can be even in jump rope. Because when you compare it to other sports, I was not training less than any of the traditional athletes or traditional sport people who were playing football or any other things. Actually more. So yeah. In a way, I wanted to change this perception of the people that it is a real sport and it's hard. And then you need the same amount of energy and input to be able to get results at the end. And I think it was a good, because the people, when they hear it, and I wanted something which is about numbers. So it's not a subjective thing that you look at it and you like it or you don't like it, but it's really giving you a number that, okay, it's this much. Mm-hmm. And then when you try it, then you understand that, okay, this is hard.
Yeah.
It's no kidding, it's hard.
Yeah.
So at this point, I think it changed a lot. And it also, because it gave a challenge for the next generation too. Because at the moment when I did it, it was a big difference for the next ones. Even for the boys, I think it was, if I remember well, it was still for the male category, it was also the record at this time. I mean, it was not my goal, but eventually it was like this. So, yeah. And the period of training was, a lot of people ask, oh, why you need to train that much? You don't need this much, blah, blah, blah. And then eventually I said, no, but I think it can work and I will do it no matter what. So this part, I think, for me, it was important just to check also. And now I can say that it worked probably for me, it can work for somebody else. So if people ask me for advice how to train for this, I will be able to say this and this and this you have to do.
So do you have like a program that you've created that you can hand somebody, or is it still in your head?
Mm-hmm. It's still in my head, but many times we do instructor classes for people who want to train competitive jump ropers. So this is a question many times. Also for, not only for this, but general for endurance. Because I think also in Hungary at that time when we did competition, especially the girls had a very strong style on the way they made jump rope routines look for the public. It was fluid basically, or smooth. It was not very heavy skipping. So it means that you need some power in your legs and you need to train outside of jump rope, something else to be able to do that. So in our practices, to have a cross training, to have a full preparation, not only for skipping, it was very important. And it is still, because eventually it will come back to the point how long you can be able to do sports in a light way without injuries, you know, like you want to extend your lifespan of being not really as an athlete, but as a healthy human being, that you don't have to go in the gym with pain or something. Mm-hmm. And this was my second goal, to train in a way that I want to be able to do this as long as I can.
Mm-hmm.
No matter if it's a competitive or just for myself for fun, because I like the training of skipping, even if I don't have to compete or I don't have to perform or there is no specific goal. It's my first thing that I take in the gym. I don't go anywhere without my jump rope, actually.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. Yeah. So if I was summing up the things that came from that intense training season, one was the ability to pass it on. So like you learned a lot of things that now you can share with others. Two, you were able to prove to yourself and to a lot of others what was possible. Mm-hmm. Like you expanded people's horizons. Three, you were able to establish and build a healthy way of training that you could perpetuate to now, to like, would you attribute that season to being the level of a jumper that you are right now, this stage of your career?
A big part for sure. Yeah, because technically you improve so much also from it. You're pushing your limits in a way, you know, how far you can go. And I mean, you have to keep pushing them anyway. It doesn't stop at that point, but you learn a lot on the passing your comfort zone certain times for sure, and failing, because it's like it's a discipline where you cannot make a mistake. So it's that's the other pressure on it, that maybe you are able to do, maybe many people are able to do this number, but at the moment when they have to perform it at a competition or under pressure, basically it's not easy to stay without mistakes. It's very hard. especially when you start to get tired, I don't know, maybe over 200, 250, you start to be tired. You have to be able to compensate that technically, and also to be able to correct little things that by the tiredness changes the way of technique as well.
Mm-hmm.
So for that, you need to do a lot more actually at the training to prepare yourself for that. And comes back to the sentence that you said that, yeah, you have to experience how many different ways you can fail.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask you really quickly, did you ever set a better number in training than you did live, or was your best performance your live one?
Performance, yeah.
Yeah. And did people, when you were doing all of this, like setting your mind so intensely on most consecutive triple unders, what were people saying to you? Like, were they saying, totally worth it, keep going, let's see what you can do? Were people saying, why? I know you mentioned, like, why are you spending all your time training? Like, what were the voices and the counsel and advice? And was there anything that, like, you really held on to that somebody said to you?
Actually, none.
Oh, no.
I didn't hold on to anything. It was like, first of all, my dad used to be my coach as well. And,
okay.
And they didn't like this discipline. They don't like it up till today, actually.
Really?
Triple under is not, it's not interesting. It's also the way of training is not healthy and so on. And I said, why is it not healthy? It's all right. So I usually train for it after we finish the training with the team and for the individual parts. And I try to stay in the corner and do the things that I thought was good for me to do at this point. And so this was the first, it was not really a friction. They just didn't really consider it was important to train for that separately so much. And then there are people who are neutral about it. Okay, cool. You train for that. What is it exactly? Consecutive triple unders. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
that was the other one. And then there are people who are cheering for you, of course. And then when you enter the competition field, then the whole thing changes, because then it starts to be interesting that who stays up, basically. You start mm-hmm. going together. And then when you see that, okay, people are falling out on this field, that field, that field, and then you are maybe two, three people who are still going, then it starts to be very spectacular and interesting eventually. Then from this moment, the people don't say anything bad. Yeah, so from this moment, they actually appreciate the effort and they understand the difficulty and also acknowledge your energy invested in it. So, but I think I am stubborn enough to go on my own way sometimes. So it was useful at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you were, right? Because if your coach and your father, which, you know, parents are super influential in your life, coaches, if they're not your parent, are super influential in your life, put them together. Like, if that person is saying to you, what are you doing? You had to have a little bit of a stubborn streak of like, this is worth it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, there it exists.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I would imagine you would probably attribute some of that stubbornness, if that's the right word, maybe it's a different word, but to the level of success that you were able to obtain.
I think it also continued after with the Cirque du Soleil contract, because that was also not the favorite choice for my parents. Not my mom, mostly for my father. Because then, you know, at this time in Hungary, it was not very well known. And the first idea that they came into their mind was like, you're going to live in caravans. And I said, no, not necessarily. I don't think we will do that.
Yeah.
And then, so until the moment when we went to watch my sister's performance in Philadelphia, it was, of course, then they understood where she's going and what happened, and that it's a good place to be, and it's really a really special place for an artist or for an athlete to be accepted and to be given a contract like that. And then when we watched the show, and then they saw that, okay, what we were talking about was not too bad.
Yeah.
And the whole idea changed about it.
Wow. Oh, man. You know, parents, and especially a father's opinion, matters quite a bit. And so I'm sure there was like this tension in you to like honor and listen to what he was saying, but then still pursue this thing that you believed in and wanted to try. Did you have a lot of going back and forth, or was it, you know, just initially and then you set your sights and you were gone, you were doing it?
I think it was mostly initially, and until they realized that what we've been working on and doing is a good thing. So, and we are at a good place. It's not that we are living in, I mean, even if I was living in a caravan, I did that also. Afterwards, actually not after, before, it was another contract which I didn't know, but I took it, and it was a good thing. It was nice. It was a different experience, but yes, it was not Cirque du Soleil. But this I didn't say to them, and probably will not understand in this interview anyway.
So totally fine.
So anyway. No, there was no friction afterwards. And then once they saw that we are desperately decided and we want to go there, then they were okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So now you've been through this, you had that friction, you set your sights, all of this stuff that you've learned. Somebody's in their own hard season. They're trying to decide if what they've set their sights on is worth pursuing. What advice would you give them?
My first advice would be to go step by step. For me, it usually works, because when you look at the big picture, it's sometimes scary. And then you see, you feel you are really far. That's how I felt at that moment. It's is it possible? Is it not possible? But when you start to take the first step, then you have a little bit of success, probably, if the step is well set or well chosen. Then you can take the next step. And then eventually you will have, I think, your own inspiration, motivation, and then it will help you to keep going and take bigger steps eventually. So I think it's very important how you pace yourself always, not only in training, but in life as well, to be able to set goals that are possible to reach. And then you can look at the bigger picture.
Okay. So take me back. How did that apply with the Cirque? Because you said it was a 6-year process before you got accepted. Can you even remember what some of the little goals were that you had set step by step to get to that point?
I actually didn't expect anymore from them any call after 6 years. But I was happy for my sister, because she was there. I really didn't expect that I will have the chance to work with them ever. I still did my own trainings, and I never stopped. So I never stopped doing jump rope, and I never stopped training on the same way at the 6 years, how I used to be before for competitions and also for performances. So I did my own little performances for little communities, for charities, for children in the schools. I start to teach a lot of classes, and I keep training. I didn't attend competitions at this time. I just wanted to, because I like the training part of it. So I kept the same kind of training, and I experimented with a lot of footwork patterns also. And this, I actually didn't keep in touch with Cirque du Soleil also. So I was not sending them updated videos every month or every 3-4 months to, guys, I'm here, I want to work with you. I was working just for my own entertainment, basically. Yeah, after 6 years, they called me that there is a spot in New York, and if I'm interested, because they would like me to join the cast that is going for 3 months for the Christmas season. And then at this time, I had all my life built up in Prague.
Yeah.
I was full of classes and so on. But I thought, okay, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, so I'm going. And after what will happen, I don't know yet, but something will happen. So and then I left for 3 months. And when I came back, but for 2 months, you know, you can organize some substitution here and there. It's possible if you just leave for one time.
Yeah.
But then I came back and I start to take back all the classes and restart. And I think it was maybe 2.5 months that I spent in Prague. And then I get another call that, okay, now we would like you, actually, your sister would like you to replace her for 3 months. And then I was like, okay, good. I'm going.
Wow. Just had to up and leave a few different times, but you're committed to it.
I was ready to go. And then after this, I started to learn a lot of things. I mean, also from the first time when I joined the cast, for me, it was a very good education. Not necessarily on jump rope, but on a lot of other things about how to promote yourself as a solo art, as an artist in general, also about how to create a stage routine, what you have to pay attention to, and so on. So when I came back after the second adventure of Cirque, then I started to build my own things. So I started to create my own routine, costumes, and all what I need around it. And then the videos as well. And then I got a lot of possibilities outside of Cirque du Soleil to perform. So yeah. We were doing a mix of, I was working several months there, and then I could do my own thing. So it was a good mix.
Yeah, so you learned quite a bit through it. I like to ask this question as kind of like the last question. What is a hard thing that you're currently in the middle of?
A lot. We are building an academy in Hungary for jump rope. It's a nice thing, but it doesn't feel hard at the moment, but there is a lot of things to do around it. So this one is something special, and also special to work with children. And I like to work with children who have the same kind of dream. Not necessarily everybody will have it, but I like to see few of them that has a dream to pursue in this field. And yeah. I'm searching who could be the one that can continue and that I can help to go far enough in this field.
Yeah, so you're making like jump rope disciples. You're trying to multiply and have more people that can promote the sport.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's one part. Other than this, it's for us, I think it's also a time when life is changing a little bit, quite a bit, from traveling around a lot to staying at home more and building our things here. So that's another hard part to get used to it. It's a step-by-step process also, because during the years, it's been always like I worked in very fancy places and I worked in the very small places as well. So the difference was always huge. I perform at the NBA game at New York Knicks, and the next day I perform at the Village Day for 30 people, where is no stage and you are on the concrete. So yeah. I mean, it's okay. It's nice. It's sometimes nicer than the big things because of the people who are there. But the change of living from this to the normal, more normal life is a hard part. Because you don't have the same kind of, it's not a motivation, it's more like adrenaline in a way, I think, that will keep you going.
Yeah.
So you have to do that shift at one point. And I think for us, it's this kind of time when, at least for me, for my sister, maybe she's still ready to go a little bit more. I'm more ready to settle.
Yeah.
And that's a harder way.
Yeah. Some of the videos that are out there are like, you are the jump rope girl. And does it feel a little bit like, as you're shifting away from that life, so to speak, that part of your identity is getting reformed and like you're having to set aside this who you have been for such a long time? Is that part of what makes it hard?
Probably also. And what the people expect you to do. And sometimes they still, I mean, obviously you cannot maintain being the best. And it's not the goal eventually. It was a nice period. And I actually don't consider I never did consider myself the best. In triple unders, there was a time when I had the highest number, but it's very complex to say that about somebody who is doing jump rope, but you are the best, blah, blah, blah. And it's very subjective also, because some people like different styles. It's not necessarily me who has to be the best, or I'm happy if there are more of us. So it's cool. But anyway, the identity is for sure is inside, because it's something that you created and you lived it for many years.
Right.
And it's not that easy to shift. And also I had a period when it was not, now I'm okay with it, but I had a period when it was, you feel that you're not able to do the same anymore and you can't, and you have to accept that. And this is hard. when you feel it on your body that you go in the gym, and I know how much I have to train to reach that number or the level, but if I train this much, I actually don't do good for myself, I damage myself. So this, to find the balance at one point, is difficult to shift. So it's another experiment, how and what is enough and what is not enough and so on. But for sure, the identity shifting, I accept it, and it's a good thing. It takes some time, I think, but you can recreate it always. And this change, I mean, also when doing choreographies, the emotions and the things that you want to share with people is changing. It's not the same every month or every year. And for this reason, I also don't like to do the same choreography for a long time because it's not me anymore.
Yeah.
I'm a different character than I was 3 years ago or maybe 5 years ago. Sometimes when they ask me to do that routine and that choreography, I'm like, oof, please not that one.
Yeah.
There is one which is constant and I'm happy to do it whenever, is the one on the Hungarian music. This one, for some reason, I don't feel that it changes inside me. That one is something that I can do, I think, for a long time. In a way, it's time for the new people to come in and do my job.
Yeah. It sounds like, you know, you've had a little bit of time to get to that place.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like taken, like a lot of people who have injuries or they were forced to retire. It's just cut off immediately. And you kind of gotten to like slowly release it, which is sounds like a really like a gift, like to be able to do it that way. Before I let you go, people who maybe are just hearing you for the first time, or they have loved, you know, what they've seen of you and the way that you jump, like how can people follow you, connect with you, see what you're up to in the next 6 months, a year? Where are you at?
The easy way is if they look for, probably YouTube will be a good spot to find everything about me. If they put Adrian Jump Rope, they will find quite a few videos. And Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, they can find my name as well, Adrian Banhedy. And then also, if they are looking into some more training ideas, then they can also check Jump Plus World.
Okay, jumpplusworld.com?
.com.
Mm-hmm. .com. Okay, cool. Well, Adrian, thanks for hopping on. This is a lot of fun. You have so much joy. And it really comes through. And I appreciate that about you. So it was really fun and easy to talk to you. And I'm glad that we got to do this.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Do Hard Things podcast by Elite SRS. We hope you're encouraged today and have a newfound hope to persevere. Be sure to subscribe for more great episodes and conversations. And if you ever want to watch an episode, check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/ElitesRS. Have a blessed day.